Simon Dreyermeister one with Yishin Cheng.
Zing.
And to continue with her oral history interview for the Pew Scholars Project, and we're at her office at the Carnegie Institution of Washington.
Yeah.
That's actually this department's in Baltimore.
Yeah.
I'd like to, I just basically kind of pick up where we left off yesterday and ask you, when did your parents become convinced that, you know, biology or the life sciences was something worth pursuing?
My parents?
Yeah. You had said, well, that there was a little bit of
reluctance. Yeah, well, they just, I think they were tired with my insistence on having to go into biology and not wanting to stay with them in mechanical engineering or in the same university. I think they've probably always known I've been very stubborn. I always want to do whatever they don't want me to do. So, and I think biology isn't something that's going to kill them. But the thought of me in biology is definitely far better than the thought of me, you know, doing something not even scientifically related. I think that's probably why they decided, anyway, if they keep fighting with me, then I stay in the university. They'll be having to deal with me, fighting with me all the time if I'm unhappy. I think that's why they just give up. They just say, well, fine.
Okay. And what kind of educational opportunities did your sister have in China?
So she actually was going to elementary school. She wasn't. She was still very sick when I went to college. She was going through surgery.
Okay.
She was going through a lot of surgery to fix her heart.
Mm-hmm.
So I think while I was in college, she started elementary school, but her elementary school is very far away from home. So she has to take buses, several transfer of buses, to get to the center of the Chongqing, the city, from my home. My home is kind of the suburb of Chongqing, so she has to commute. So it was a big ordeal for her, especially she doesn't have a good health.
Right.
And she had to spend at least an hour one way to get there. So it was, I'm not sure she really learned much, because she would be frequently sick and not going to school.
Well, then to pick up where we left off, you had decided to go to Ohio State primarily because your father was at Akron University and said, why don't you come over here for graduate school? And that's how you ended up in Ohio.
Yeah, he sent me the application forms for Ohio and Akron, and Ohio just happened to be taking students off season in the winter.
Okay.
So they took me, and I was like, well, why not? So I just went.
Yeah.
I don't think there was much planning or thinking going into that.
Okay. How well, languages differences aside, and you know that you weren't conversant in English, how well had your education in China prepared you to start work, you know, in a graduate program in the United States?
I think the basic understanding of biology, like I think the courses I took in cell cell biology probably is one of the best preparations. I think the other courses was okay. I mean, like I said, even though I skipped classes a lot, but we did have to take exams.
Mm-hmm.
So you still, towards the end, before the exam, you still have to really read, and I scored pretty reasonably.
Mm-hmm.
So those, biology, even when I was entering graduate school, was still a primarily memory-based science. As long as you remember certain basic things, it's not too foreign for me to enter the graduate program. I think the major difficulty was really the language. That was very, very hard.
And what about the hands? Just working in the lab and learning tools, how well did you...
I was not prepared at all. I have to say Burl trained me in every aspect. I was not prepared. I never even see a pipette man before I went to Ohio State. So I had absolutely no idea what is molecular biology. what is the experimental aspect of molecular biology, and you can actually pipette such minute volume. It was completely new to me.
Yeah, okay. Well, how did that compare to, say, other graduate students who were starting the program? Exposure to...
there are much that, for example, I have a fellow graduate student who came from South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
He got a master's degree in South Korea, and South Korea's science in those days were already far advanced than China. So I asked him, so you've seen this before? He said, of course, I've used them. I did research.
Okay.
I realized how dumb I was. It was bad. Yeah, he was much more, he was much better prepared, because I guess one reason is that he had a master's degree. The second reason is that South Korea then probably had more advanced research than the ordinary schools in China. But I bet, you know, like Beijing University, the best universities would have better equipment to do biology. Like I think, for example, my husband, when he came a little bit early than I did, he actually did plasmid isolation in the brief research period he had in Beijing University.
Okay.
So he did some molecular biology,
okay.
But he's from Beijing University.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, how much thought up until this point did you give to model choice?
Model systems.
Model systems.
No thought. I was just, what I think I was going by is whatever made sense to me.
Yeah, okay.
Whatever logically makes sense to me. And Burroughs research really logically made sense to me. So I decided to do it, because I understand it.
Okay.
That's all I did. I really didn't. Again, it's sort of lack of planning, lack of knowing exactly what I want to do. No, I don't have.
And what was the environment at the time in the Oakley lab? Had they already published their work on gamma tubulin?
They were in the process of cloning it while I was joining the lab. They already finished the genetic screen. Mm-hmm. They already mapped the gamma tubulin locus. So it was quite exciting. I was able to understand when I read Burroughs' genetic paper. I was able to completely understand the concept between suppressor screen, the concept behind suppressor screens. So really, it's really exciting to think, oh God, they will be able to identify this gene. It would be really exciting to know what it is. And then I think a year or two after I joined the lab, they cloned it, and it turns out to be gamma tubulin.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so where was your project fitting in? I understand you ended up, you know, the big paper that came out of that, your work there, wasn't what you originally started off with.
No. So Burrow originally had me to work on I actually had two projects. One is to just do a, you know, traditional genetic screen, suppressor type of screen, because usual screens is not saturated, so you would expect if you go back screen more, you'll get more. So I did that, and nothing really came out in the initial screen. It was boring. I know you noticed that I say boring a lot. I'm somebody who's really afraid of being bored.
Okay.
So I was like, well, that's not very interesting and also not very promising. Then I switched to another project where you actually make a library of small fragments of DNA, and then this DNA you use to transform the Aspergillus, which is the model organism Burrow uses. Then this small DNA will do gene homologous recombination to integrate into a gene, and that will cause disruption of that gene, and then use this manipulations that unique and very nice in Aspergillus, you may be able to trap the gene that might be important for mitosis. So I did that for about a year and a half. I was able to actually get some interesting mutations, but what's not foreseen was that actually these short fragment integration wasn't stable.
Mm.
So by the time I get ready to isolate the gene, they were jumping around, they came out. So that was kind of disappointing, but I actually learned a lot. I enjoyed it, because I actually started that project by first making a library, and then do all the transformation, and then do all the phenotypic-based screen, and then confirm by Western, by Southern, that it's integrated. So I learned a bunch of techniques in that process. And then, you know, knowing that project is not going anywhere, I just basically decided, because that by then I was like in the second and a half year or third year even in graduate school, I decided, well, I need a project that's most likely going to get me something.
Right,
and that's when gamma tubulin was cloned and published, and it was very obvious, yeah, this is gamma tubulin, this is a tubulin that came from an organism that's really not even very well known among fungi. It's not a very well known model system, not popular. So one very important question is whether it's a conserved molecule. If it's not conserved, it could just be an evolutionary oddity of Aspergillus. But really now, after genome sequencing, you go look back at my project, it was just nothing. Then it was important because genome wasn't sequenced. It's an important question to address, but it's really not. I don't view that work as really big. It was just timely.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
not profound.
As most, you know, scientific discoveries are probably, you know, that we look back upon and wonder about are timely because the genome hadn't been sequenced,
and it didn't even look like
you know it was going to be within.
Yeah.
A certain amount of time that would be completed. How confident with these two other projects that one didn't pan out, the other one really didn't pan out, but you learned a lot of good techniques. How confident were you that this project would then?
I was pretty confident. I don't know. I guess the one thing I was probably being, I don't know, maybe this characterized somebody who is willing to continue to do research, is that I never really expect something would work. I always thought, you try, and you just keep trying. And I felt, you know, looking for homology is most likely going to work. I think gamma tubulin is going to be conserved, because tubulin, alpha and beta tubulins are extremely conserved. Mm-hmm. Belonging to the same family suggested it would be conserved. Mm-hmm. The question really was, well, even if you find a conserved gene, it may not have a conserved function. It may not, for example, localize to centrosome, which is the microtubule nucleating place for animal cells.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I really wasn't that concerned. I just felt that would be a project that would go reasonably fast, you know.
Yeah.
And then I could actually graduate.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, and, you know, how aware were you as a graduate student that there were kind of these traditional steps a graduate student had to take in order to go on to the next round or on to the
I'm very aware of that, very much.
Yeah. So how concerned were you that you weren't getting that many publications?
I was very concerned.
Okay.
I was very concerned that in the end, I had one publication. I actually had, after I published that one paper,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to get another publication. So I did a bunch of other experiments, you know, looking at gamma tubulin regulation, the function of gamma tubulin in tissue culture cells. I think now in retrospect, I actually got a phenotype, I think, but it was not very clear. And, you know, I've been then, by then, I've had a child, and I've been in graduate school for a while. So, you know, Burl was not in any way of feeling like I have to stay to get a second paper.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Then I felt like, okay, fine.
Yeah.
But I think if Burl really insisted that I should have a second paper, I would have stayed.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I was very worried.
Yeah.
I think this also probably has something to do with, it's one reason probably that I wasn't able to get a fellowship. And the other reason is Bruce left his lab.
Right, right.
So
yeah, yeah.
I this is how I think about it.
Okay.
But Bruce always was very nice, saying, well, you know, don't worry about it. I left the lab. You'll have difficulty. But in the bottom of my heart, I knew that if I had another publication, I probably would still get it or be at least more competent to get fellowship, even though Bruce is not going to be in the lab.
Yeah, okay.
But,
well, for you, what was going to be the next step? What were your options as you were completing your PhD work? whether to go on to a postdoc in the United States, to return to China. I mean, what kind of possibilities
you could go back to China, but then it was not as set up as now. Now, if you have a good publication, like, you know, a high-profile paper, it's very well received in China now. I think now, as a graduate student, if you have a good publication, you might be able to get an assistant professor position in one of those very good universities. I don't know, I've never asked. But I've seen people going back now, going straight into a research position where they can really have their students and start to apply for grants, also have some startup money to do research, like in this country. China is moving towards this country really rapidly. It's really very amazing and really interesting. In fact, I'm going to visit in October. So then it was not set up like that. If then you go back, you would end up in those probably some kind of teaching, and it's just, you wouldn't really be able to do much research. No,
yeah.
No.
And that's what you wanted to do.
At that point, I felt research actually is like what my parents had said, you know, it still allows you, it still occupies your mind, allow you to use your imagination to really do new things, so you won't be bored. And I agreed with that after that.
Okay.
So I was pretty settled. I felt like research would be a life that I would be happy with.
Okay. And were you aware of the irony at that point that your teenage years criticizing your parents, you didn't
want
to do that?
Yeah, I was fully aware of that. I was always thinking, well, maybe this is my father's design that I would in the end do whatever he wanted me to do. I don't know. I'm still thinking about that now. I mean,
yeah.
To say, why don't you come abroad, is something, you know, at that point, definitely not on my agenda. I wasn't even thinking about going to graduate school. What do you mean by going abroad to go to graduate school? But he was able to, you know, appeal to the aspect of me that wanting to explore, wanting to have new things happening in life.
Yeah.
I think that definitely attracted me.
Right. And so did they tell you, oh, I told you so? Or
no,
they
never
did
that.
Did they tell your grandson, you know,
I think my parents are sort of more preoccupied. I mean, their life had always been fulfilled their responsibilities. I think they were always preoccupied with my sister's sickness.
Yeah, yeah.
So for me, they just really wanted to make sure that I will do okay, so they don't have to worry about me in the future.
Yeah.
So once they feel they've done that, they really don't have time to pat their shoulder. They have no time to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Many Pew scholars take the opportunity with a postdoc to learn new techniques or actually move into new areas.
Yeah.
And you continue.
That was the reason for that.
Yeah.
I felt when I was in my early graduate school year, I really didn't do enough reading, and I only came to recognize that in the last year in graduate school. And I felt like there is no way that I would survive if I move into a new area, because I haven't done much reading in any area other than my own narrow area. So I felt I wouldn't be able to identify a good project. I don't know what's the best question to ask, what's the most important question to ask, and secondly, is that question I ask solvable? Is there available tools already, available information already to solve that problem? I wouldn't be able to do that if I switch field. So I decided to stay. It was a lazy approach. It was an approach that I just sort of felt I have to take. Otherwise, I would be probably sinking to the bottom.
Yeah.
That's why I did that.
And as a graduate, as a university student in China, how much exposure did you have to the current state of techniques, like libraries with the major...
Very little.
Yeah.
Well, I would say, since I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention in research, I didn't really research. I didn't really look into it. I'm sure students who are very keen on research probably had checked in the library. And maybe you can get nature and science.
Mm-hmm.
That's later, probably a few months behind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've never really paid attention.
Okay.
I mean, since I wasn't really serious about research until I came here.
Yeah. And by the time you finished your PhD, what was your intellectual interest in cell biology as an issue to attack?
Well, I felt intellectually identification of gamma tubulin being a conserved component offered now a opportunity to begin to understand how microtubule is nucleated from the centrosome. That, to me, I feel, is a good opportunity. And if I keep continuing that, I might be able to answer additional questions that's really burning in my mind for that field, because I really understand that field, microtubule nucleation. It's a narrow field, microtubule nucleation, centrosome function. I feel it's really important next step somebody has to tackle. And I feel in my training, what I'm lacking is biochemistry. I did genetics, I did molecular biology, but I did not do any biochemistry. So, you know, among all the people I've looked at, Bruce Albert's lab is the best biochemistry lab where I feel I could learn.
Okay, and how many other positions did you apply
to? I applied to several. I think I total looked into nine labs.
Mm-hmm.
All of those labs are on microtubules, various aspects of microtubule cytoskeleton.
And did you consider joining the Mitchison lab to begin with?
No, actually, Tim's lab is one of the labs I also looked. It's one of the line, one of the nine labs I looked at. So when I was interviewing, Tim sort of felt that, you know, I don't think Tim gave me an offer.
Okay.
He didn't. Bruce offered me, and some other labs offered me. Among all the labs, I felt Bruce's lab is really the best for me. And there was some interesting discussion I had with Burl while I was looking for my postdoc and searching for my postdoc. Burl said, well, you know, in my lab, he really talked to me a lot. We had been interacting. It's okay. So he said, you know, you may want to consider to go to a lab where the PI is more involved. And I said, well, I'm not sure. I said, if I'm going to fail, if I cannot be independent, I would rather fail when I'm a postdoc. I would rather know that early on than having to learn that after I get my position as an assistant professor. So I think that's another reason I really decided to go to Bruce's lab. I know if I go to Bruce's lab, I have all the freedom I want to decide what project to do, and then I have all the expertise I can ask for help.
Yeah. And what other labs were you considering?
Tim's lab, Ron Vail's lab. I applied to Tim's lab, Ron Vail's lab, Biggs Fuller's lab, Ron Morris's lab, Joe Rosenbaum,
mm-hmm.
and Larry Goldstein.
Mm-hmm.
There are two other labs I can't remember right at the minute. I remember, three other labs. I remember I had Don Cleveland on my list, and then in the end I felt it's too many. I crossed that off. And then there are two more. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think I did apply to Mark Kirshner, but his reply was that his lab is full for the next 2 years, so that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember the final one.
Yeah, okay. Before we move you off to San Francisco, a couple of questions about Ohio State. And how was Oakley as a mentor?
He's a great mentor to me, especially because I was not very well trained.
Yeah.
I was not trained, period, for experimental biology. To me, he was a great mentor because he really made sure that I was trained properly, that I would do experiments rigorously, interpret the results rigorously, instead of just, you know, run wild with taking all kinds of assumptions and things like that. I think that was really very fundamental for me to, in the end, being able to do something on my own. I think without that training, if I just entered any lab, without any supervision, I might be actually end up being very, very disappointed with doing science. Because with Burroughs training, basically, I learned, you know, yeah, you might get a negative result, but negative result doesn't mean that at the end of the road you can interpret it, you can look at it logically and then think about how to plan next step. I think those are very, very important trainings for me.
Yeah.
But maybe, I don't know, other people may not need that, but I thought it was really important. I really learned how to do it right instead of how to do it, but not necessarily right.
Right. And you had mentioned yesterday that his lab was small.
It was quite small.
The entire time that you were there or after he cloned?
No, it's been small. It's been small throughout the years. He's always had a small lab. But like most people. Most people don't get to have very big labs.
Okay. Well, and I also want to go back to the transition between, or just becoming acculturated, if that's the right word, to American culture. And what struck you the most about American graduate student life?
Well, what struck me was probably just in general Americans' life.
Okay.
It's just so isolated. Like, you know, in China, you live in dorm, but you are roommates for, I lived in this 1-3 bedroom dorm where I share a room with my roommate, and then there's total 6 girls together.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't feel loneliness. But here you live in the room by yourself. Even when you share something with somebody, you still have the room all to yourself. And you have all different schedules, and you just, it was really lonely. I think Americans are very used to have a very, very used to solitude. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
And that was something I really, really was not used to. I was so lonely. I just won't see anybody. And I see people, they're very happy. My American colleagues or American graduate students, they seem to be happy. It's really normal to go home to your own room all by yourself. And nobody really cared about anybody else's business, whereas in China, everybody cared about everybody's business. That was a huge change. And you know, in China, I always wished that nobody would bother me. But actually, when I came here, I realized I liked people to bother me because this is too lonely. That was the biggest difference I felt, and that was the biggest thing I felt that I really needed to overcome. But I really probably never overcame that, because then I met my husband, we got married, and I wasn't lonely anymore.
Yeah, okay. And
We got married. I met him after, like, a 3 month after I came.
Okay.
And then we got married half a year later.
A whirlwind romance. And he's also from China?
Yeah, he's also, he came through a exam, you know, it's a, he belonged to one of those best students, so he get to come.
A's, didn't he?
That's right, he's straight A student, so the best throughout his career and everything. And he was able to come, you know, on this scholarship that one rich Hong Kong guy offered to, he set up a program to get the brightest kids to come over to get education.
And what's his field?
He's in biochemistry.
Biochemistry.
Yeah,
okay.
That's how we met.
Okay. Well, we're gonna get to more of that probably tomorrow. But well, how much say tolerance or intolerance did you run into with just trying to fit into?
I don't think there's any intolerance. I think in general, this culture is pretty tolerant.
Okay.
I think it's more of inhibition of myself, because I'm afraid of trying to make a conversation, yet I'm not understanding them. It's more of an inhibition on my part. I don't think it's, I mean, after my language become better and better, I really try to integrate more and more. I haven't really noticed much of intolerance. I think in general people are very tolerant.
Yeah. Well, you had mentioned yesterday that at the very end that, you know, your GPA, your first semester was questionable.
That was the scare. Yeah. So what they did is they got me to take a course that was allowed, that you both grad, it's an advanced course for undergrad, but graduate student can also take. So I made an A in that course.
Okay.
That's how my GPA came back up.
Okay. Let me turn the tape over.